Tony Bennett and his staff are considered one of the top coaching crews in the NCAA, measured by winning a national championship, winning multiple ACC championships, the team's winning percentage over the last several years, and the number of players in the NBA. What most people don't know, the UVA staff aren't the only guys guiding the players. Training guru Damon Altizer works with several UVA basketball players individually, and they credit him with supplementing their development. T-Dubs, are you surprised at how much influence Damon has with these guys?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would say surprised just because I've heard it over the years that they go and work out with him. And I think there's some cool stuff in here for those people. Like, really, we're going to talk to a trainer for the next hour. But it's like, he's really part of this thing. It's cool to hear his stories and the texts that he's gotten from them. And he talks, you know, a few really unique stories that I don't think I've heard before, which I think are vital for, you know, the inside knowledge that we're trying to obtain here. Is pretty darn cool, I gotta say. What do you think, Doug?
Yeah, I thought the same thing. Like, I thought the intricacies of the work he does and how he does it, and having these high level players that trust him in the time that their assistant coaches and head coach are literally not allowed to spend time with him at certain times on the court, I should say. So he fills that gap, and he's, you know, proven himself to be a huge part of the development in the team.
And also, I was going to say, the investment from the players, right? He talks about how they pay him, they reach out to him, they do the whole thing above the board, which is pretty cool to hear. I mean, honestly,
I thought it was one of the coolest things. Yeah,
I've watched his workouts, and he's absolutely worth it. I've watched him individual workouts. I've watched him do door workouts where he has multiple staff members working with him to work individual players out, and I've taken stuff from him. He's really, really good. And I've watched other people work out who claim to be workout trainers. And I'm going, there's such a significant difference. And if these parents could only see how good Damon is versus the person that they have hired to train their kids, they would understand what a real trainer is.
Right. And he's very cerebral. You can tell about his approach and forward thinking, and like, wants to be that guy. Doesn't want to be that guy. He's going overboard that, you know, he's really making a difference, which is, I think, it's really cool to see here.
Now joining us, Damon Altizer. Damon, welcome.
What's up, fellas?
How's everything? What's up?
What's up, man?
It's like everybody, guys, surviving right now, trying to deal with the new normal.
Yeah, and you've got young kids at home too, right?
Yeah, 4-year-old and a 1-year-old. So, life is very busy.
Well, I appreciate you. We feel your pain.
Yeah. This means even more. Taking the time to do this. We appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. I appreciate you guys.
Absolutely. So you are like the trainer for UVA basketball players, right? Amongst many other players as well. But a lot of the UVA guys will come to you. And right now you're currently training a couple of guys in a secretly disclosed location in Charlottesville, right? How's that going, training Jay, Dev, and Ty?
It's good. You know, I think a lot of NBA guys right now are kind of just lounged up or, you know, not really putting in work. But as everybody knows, those guys are so just dedicated to their craft, trying to find any way possible. So we're kind of able to work something out where they could get back here to Charlottesville and work out. And, you know, they're just getting after it every day, getting a ton of shots. And whether this is the beginning of the off season or they head back and play here in a month, you know, they're going to be ready, which is great. And it's been, you know, a fun month.
How did it happen that you started training those guys?
It's actually when Coach McKay was still at UVA, his youngest son, G, was working out, and Justin Anderson was in the gym. And he watched what we were doing. He asked Coach McKay. We kind of got connected then. Justin got some the year before, you know, he went and entered the draft. And then after that, Dev was kind of the first guy who came really consistently. And from him, DT, like Darius Thompson, London, Ty texted me before he came to town. And so it's kind of, it went from one, Justin, you know, years ago, and it's just kind of expanded since then, where now I get to the end of the regular season, guys will, you know, shoot a text and, hey, like, want to get together this off season. And it's kind of become fun to be, albeit, you know, very, very minute, you know, a small piece of all the phenomenal things that are going on with the program.
What's the, what's kind of the formula? Is it depends on the player, work on ball handling, work on shooting? If somebody's weak at something, you try to, or is it uniform?
Yeah, it's super player specific. Especially now, like, I spent some time with, you know, with Coach Bennett, Johnny Carpenter obviously does a ton with with the film piece in it. So it's super specific to each individual player. For example, with Ty going into his junior year, as he wanted to work a lot on floaters, he wasn't shooting as well on the right side of the court, coming off of pin downs. And obviously when they run sides, they're shooting, you know, a ton off of pin downs. So it is, it's super specific to the individual player, as opposed to just, hey, we're coming in the gym and we're going to shoot. We're going to do a few drills. With guys at that level who obviously have aspirations at the college level and then beyond, like it's crucial that it is that there's that level of specificity as opposed to just, hey, let's come do some drills.
Yeah.
And one piece I wanted to mention, in terms of they pay you to do this, right? Like, it's not like, you know, you're just doing this for the heck of it. This is your life and your business.
Right.
Can you talk about how that works?
And also speaking to UVA as a program, like it's, you know, the guys have to pay. It shows their investment, how they're using, you know, the money that they do have. Where a lot of programs like don't hold themselves to that standard. UVA does. And yeah, I think it makes it that much more rewarding for me to know that you're a part of something that, you know, that they believe so much in what you're doing, they're seeing results. And then at the same time, we're doing it the only way UVA does it, which is the right way.
That's awesome.
Is it totally optional for players, or do they have to have?
Yeah, no, 100%. It's completely voluntary. It's kind of now like that, you know, guys will have my number or whatever. I've never once reached out to a player who I haven't worked and said, hey, you want to come work out this summer? It comes strictly from them, which I think is kind of a testament to their culture and the work ethic and how, you know, obviously Coach Bennett's huge on development. They reach out and then we kind of go from there.
I was going to say the one thing we always talk about, our people talk about, is, oh, Coach Bennett is the one doing all of this training that makes them so great and improve. But how much of the onus is actually just finding guys that are willing to do the work? Is it a combination of those two, or do you think like these guys have to put in the work to get better, not necessarily just come to UVA?
Yeah, I think a lot of it, like you just said, it's the onus is on them. And obviously with NCAA regulations, Coach Bennett or anybody on the staff, they can only spend but so much time each week with the players, both in season and off season, which is a challenge. And then Coach Bennett with, you know, he's so selfless. A lot of guys, especially head coaches, they kind of have that ego and they don't want their players working with other guys. And he's kind of the opposite, and we've kind of built that relationship and that trust. And, you know, he knows that what I'm doing is going to hopefully serve the program in a small way. And so then those who want to reach out, and we kind of go from there.
So when people talk about Tony Bennett developing NBA players, it's actually Damon doing it.
Not really Tony Bennett.
Let's just make that clear. Yeah,
that's my takeaway.
That's absolutely not.
So how did the relationship start with you and the coaches, you and Richie McKay?
He randomly called me at the time. I was, you know, in a different spot, different school here in Charlottesville. And he called me kind of out of the blue and just said, you know, I heard you were doing workouts here in town. Would you be interested in working with G? And from there, you know, the relationship has just kind of grown. One of the first things he said to me is he just wanted me to work with G on some, you know, fundamental things. G was 12 or 13 at the time. Don't curse at him. Don't cuss at him. Just help him get a little bit better. And from that one call, everything is, you know, has grown to where it is now.
And I was going to ask, in your relationship with UVA prior to this, like you walked on at UVA, is that right? I mean, what was your playing experience like as a, you know, when did this sort of turn into training versus playing?
Yeah, so I walked on 06-07, which was the first year at JPJ. It was under Lato, Sean Singletary, J.R. Reynolds. At the end of that year, basketball was finished. The major that I wanted to pursue had a lot of afternoon classes and labs. And so it kind of became like, is it academics or basketball? And again, like I said, at that point, I thought the basketball career was over. And then here we are, whatever, 11 years later, and I'm in the gym every single day, you know, back in JPJ at times and, you know, with the UVA guys. So it's kind of, it's crazy how it's come full circle. I guess in all reality, because as a walk-on, you're doing just a lot of rebounding, and I'm still doing a lot of rebounding. So my role hasn't changed that much. But just from where it was then, you know, to being back with these guys, it's, you know, the way it's come full circle has just been very rewarding and, you know, a cool story.
And what about the culture change? Like, you were there, you know, that Lato era is not exactly the, you know, the pride of Virginia, but what do you remember in terms of like style of play and practices and all of that?
I think, you know, obviously, you know, I was just there for a year, and the year that I was there, we had a very good year. 06, 07, the team, we finished tied for regular season. I think we only lost one game at home, went to the tournament. So it was a positive year, but obviously just coaching mentality and, you know, how things are gone about are just very different from Coach Lato to Coach Bennett. We did spend a lot of time, you know, defense and rebounding. Lato came from the Calhoun, you know, coaching tree, and that's what UConn was known for during that time. But then now, like with Coach Bennett, I feel he kind of jaded by the recent years. We've been so successful. Early on, there were people who were saying like Coach Bennett's not going to work, and very, very different mentalities, but obviously I think Coach Ben is definitely the right man for the job.
No doubt. It's been absolutely amazing.
Yes.
In your development, so you finished school in 09. You finished at UVA. In
right. 09, right.
And so what was the process of you becoming a trainer?
It was crazy. Out of school, I had an engineering job. Some random boy in my hometown reached out to me and were like, hey, you know, you walked on or whatever, would you work with our kids? I'd worked with different guys when I was in high school and literally just started in a small unair conditioned gym working with a couple of kids and quickly found out that was my passion. I was working the full-time job from 9 to 5 and then going to the gym for 5 or 6 hours. So I started kind of going to coaching clinics, reaching out to different guys who I knew were working with higher level players. And then I've just been, you know, extremely fortunate to connect people who put me in positions to meet other great people and, you know, higher level players along the way. It's more of a testament to those who've been willing to help me than it is anything special that I'm doing.
Right. And you're
I think it's really interesting because I know a lot of guys that kind of do this thing, whether it's high school kids, college, pro. I actually went to camp coming up with a guy named Gannon Baker. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Left-handed and right-handed. We went to Carolina basketball camp together way back in the day. But are you guys kind of a fraternity, like with your competition? But it looks like you guys do a lot of stuff together and collaborate, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I think because Gannon was the one – I worked with him in high school at a 5-star camp, and he kind of – when I started doing it, he was the first person who I reached out to. And now, as everybody knows, there's kind of a trainer on every block where player development wasn't – you know, like mid-2000s or whatever, wasn't nearly what it is today. So there is kind of a lot of collaboration and guys who are trying to work together. Because in my opinion, I mean, we're all stepping stones or step ladders for players. And the more we can do together to help players where they want to be, it only serves, you know, those who matter most, which is the players, whether they're kids or college kids that, you know, that we're working with.
That's awesome.
You're all over the internet, right? You're on YouTube, you have a massive following. What is it about you that people follow and people want to train with you?
I don't know. I think that it's genuine and that it's real. At the end of the day, though, I think like with anything in basketball, you kind of go as your players go. And the higher level players you're working with, the more people trust you. And then with guys like, you know, with Ty and Dre and Deb, some of these guys, you know, having been with them for several years, like it's more the work that they're and what they're accomplishing on the court that have helped me. Again, like I said, more so than anything special that I'm doing.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, you can go on, anybody can go on YouTube and look at people train, or they can go down the street. As you said, there's a trainer on every corner, and literally 5 million in New York, right? There's 8 million people in New York, and maybe literally, I don't know how many are trainers, right? trainers. And there's so few of them that are solid, that are decent. And I'm not talking about good, just decent, right? And then the ones that are good, there's so few. And I watch them and I'm like, oh my God, this guy's stealing money. He's literally stealing money from me. And all because that trainer is telling that family, your kid's going to play college basketball. Your kid's going to play Division I college basketball.
Right.
And the parents are like going, oh my gosh, let me give you $200 more. Let me give you $500 more. Let me give you $5,000. Right. It's so crazy to me. When I train, I'm extremely candid. And I tell parents, this is what level your kid is. This is where he probably should be going. This is where you want to maybe think about high school or colleges, right? But you can go on online and you can watch people and you can say, what is this guy doing? Or he's pretty solid. But when I watch you train and I watch some of your videos, I'm like, this is so good. It makes so much sense. This is going to create whether whatever the object is, the objective is, you really show it through different drills. And it's productive, right? And as a matter of fact, I'll be honest, I used some stuff today. I was training at Cape Cruise Group today, and I was using your creation steps, right? And it's really productive, and I really endorse people to use it. So I mean, in your mind, and I know you're humble, and I know we've known each other for a couple of years now. Do you create your own stuff, or do you get stuff from different people? And how do you come up with, what's your formula for creating training drills?
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing for me, you just kind of said, like, taking from other trainers. I love, like, the Picasso quote, good artist copy, great artist steal. And for me, when I first started, it was all about, like, I'm going to watch this trainer. Like, I'm going to watch Gannon Baker and see what he's doing and go do that drill. And now I steal a ton, but I feel like I steal more from players than I do from trainers. So I spend a ton of time watching game footage, and this is like CJ McCollum and like the floaters he uses. Like, let's see what we can, you know, let's see what he's doing, how he's doing it, the footwork, you know, the spacing, the touch, when he's getting it off, and then how can we incorporate that into some type of a drill series. Big on decision making, where there's some type of a processing element, you know, so it's not all explicit learning. The players are implicitly trying to figure out, hey, when I'm in a game, I have to have the autonomy to make these decisions on my own and not always have, you know, have somebody telling me, you know, tell me what to do. Especially the past couple of years, as things have really gone, I feel like that's gotten a great reception. I'm not big on putting up, you know, content or videos just for likes, you know, just for the double tap. And, you know, I feel like that level of trying to be genuine, not chasing followers, not chasing likes, I try to be authentic in that way, and I feel like that's who I really am, and you know, I think the business has kind of followed.
I was going to take it back one more time in terms of Virginia. Like, what's your connection to Charlotte? Like, you're from Virginia, but Charlottesville and specifically UVA. Were you a fan as a kid before all of this?
Actually, Dev and I were just talking about this yesterday. I played Little League football when Michael Vick was Virginia Tech, so I was a Virginia Tech football fan and a Carolina basketball fan because my dad was. And UVA, like, I followed them, but not super closely. And then, crazily enough, I applied to UVA because of a girl who is now my wife and basically went to UVA because of that.
Wow.
And it's crazy how the stars have all aligned since then. You know, there's no place I'd rather be with my business, where we are in life. Like, I'm just extremely blessed, very, very happy. And it all came from probably a poor decision to chase a girl to college.
Hey,
you said it, not me. Okay, started. Isn't that the number one rule? You're not supposed to go to college with your girlfriend?
Yeah, right. It's...
No, I mean,
oh, man.
How much
communication do you have with the coaches? Say if you worked with Ty for a week or Dre or whoever, are you in constant contact with Jay Willie and Tony Bennett, whoever?
So it's typically more so like right at the end of the regular season than right at the beginning of the fall when everybody's coming back, as opposed to, you know, every single week. Because obviously, like, their time is so, you know, so much of a premium, and they're recruiting and they have meetings. I definitely communicate with Johnny Carpenter more so than anything, just because he's so involved, always watching film. He's really into player development as well. So there's constant communication, but it's not weekly, which is great. I think it speaks to their trust in me, which is, you know, it's a good feeling to know that, you know, arguably this coach, in my opinion, the best coach in college basketball, defending national champs, at the staff is willing to trust their players with somebody else. And then the work, you know, speaks for itself.
How much time do you spend watching film? NBA games, college games, individual film from different guys?
Yeah, so a lot. Like, for example, when, you know, Ty and those guys came back, I obviously tried to watch as many games throughout the year as possible. Everything kind of got expedited because we were thinking, you know, guys aren't going to be back until the offseason. But then when they came back, it's very easy to get on Synergy and watch every single possession without having to go through the whole game. Here makes, here misses. Ty had area. He's wants to work on. Dre, same way. Dev's the same way. So I try to watch as much film as possible, but be very intentional in doing so. I'm not a guy who's going to say, oh, I watched every shot made last year from UVA. Like, let's guys who are working, let's really watch what they're doing. And again, work a lot with Johnny Carpenter, where he'll say, hey, these are kind of the statistical tendencies, films kind of backing this up. So let's be as efficient as possible as just sitting down and watching games all the way through.
You said you watched them on Synergy?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Explain what that is.
So Synergy is, I guess, long short, you could go in right now and say you want to watch Ty, and you can click Phoenix Suns, you can click Ty Jerome. And then there's video of literally every single one of his possessions this year, but it's not just one long list. You can click short shot clock, early in the shot clock, basically any category of offense or defense, you can find that category and then watch makes, watch misses, watch turnovers. So the level of specificity is extreme. So if you have somebody who's struggling off the pick and roll going, you know, Ty says, I don't feel as good going right off the pick and roll, you can find those however many clips very, very quickly. So just expedites that entire process, like I said, as opposed to how it was, you know, years ago where you had to just go watch game after game after game.
And that's a platform that only a few people have access to, correct?
Yeah, most colleges have it. Some NBA teams have Second Spectrum. They're more than they're what they're used to be, but it's a pretty extensive software. So very fortunate to have access.
How often are you going to individual players with ideas as, like, you know, let's just keep saying Ty, I've noticed this in your game, I think you should work on this? Or is it all of them coming to you and saying, I want to work on my floater?
It's both. Yeah, definitely both. And then a lot of times I try to, you know, ask a ton of questions, even if they're not necessarily coming to me. Like, for example, Ty, like, hey, who did you see this year that had something in their game that, you know, maybe you didn't expect? And I'll try to go watch whoever that may be. For example, like, one was McCollum finishing, or Landry Shamet coming off, you know, pin downs, catch and shoot. Because, like, once for somebody like him or Dre or whoever, once they're around those guys, and, well, here's a player I hadn't ever thought of, but there's something about their game that I really, really like. And so, like, trying to get their feedback. And at the same time, if I see something that I think might be applicable to them, you know, it works. It's a two-way street. But it's very much a relationship-based, you know, relationship-based trait player development program, as opposed to just, hey, we're going to, like I said earlier, we're going to go to the gym and do random drills.
Yep.
And I was going to say, you mentioned this earlier in terms of, like, chasing the likes, and that, you know, ESPN Plus now has a show with Chris Brinkley on there in terms of, like, elevating the overall platform of training and bringing light to that. Is that a thing you're looking at, keeping track of, or is that not on your radar? Because it seems to me, you know, from my perspective, it seems like this is great for the industry, right? You got a guy who's kind of trailblazing in terms of, like, opening it up the eyes to way more people how important training is. But I could also see it like, this guy's a jerk that's on ESPN. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Right. No, I'm definitely, you know, stuff like that's definitely on my radar. Obviously, I said, like, I try to follow players more so than trainers. But at the same time, like, you see these guys have millions of followers. You see what they're doing. You try to, you know, see what they're doing. So they're doing well, and, you know, things like that. Putting player development on a new platform is huge. I think it's been beneficial for me, like, being around the UVA staff and, you know, different things along those lines, and the relationship that we have. A lot of times trainers kind of get a bad name because they're pushing the players' agenda, sometimes at the expense of the program, whether that's at the NBA level all the way down to middle school and high school. You know, the lines, your coach isn't using you right. If your coach would let you do the things that we work on. And so for me, like, I think that relationship has been very valuable, to try to never get that label, like, oh, he's a jerk who's just chasing likes, or he's a jerk just trying to get pictures with guys. Like, having that strong of a relationship with the coaching staff, knowing the importance of program and, like, all the different things that go into it, is just so very helpful.
For the record, I wasn't saying Chris Brinkley was a jerk, because Ty works out with him too. So I just want to make sure they didn't come off.
Come off a little bit like that. I just want you to know.
I didn't mean it to sound like that, because I know Ty works out with him and Justin and Malia. So I was just saying, as an example.
Do you ever have, when you're training younger kids, is there ever a conflict in terms of, like, recruiting and stuff? Do you ever have to toe that line at all? I'm curious.
So, I mean, you have to just be aware of you know, all the NCAA just has so many different rules and regulations right. and all those different things. But it, you know, it's, there's never been an issue in the past. I don't foresee one in the future. You know, hopefully that I'll be able to say that same thing in 3 years or 5 years or however many years down the road.
Right.
Especially also at the same time being in Charlottesville, because it's, you're working with the high kid and JPJ is right down the road. How's that going to work? But you know, it's, I know at least for me, like I know I'm going to do what's best by the kid. And I think you can never go wrong when you're doing that.
Exactly.
So, I was going to say in general, if a kid is out there curious about any of this, we'll put the link in the description below here. So just, I just want to make sure people know that. And is there any other way, the best way to reach out to you? Is it, you know, you checking DMs or is it not a thing?
Yeah, DMs or email. It's just Damon at Driven Training. Like I can drop that so you guys have all that. But yeah, pretty much any means that's out there, I'll check them.
Do you do every age group?
So I've been fortunate to, when I started doing this, like I was at a facility in Raleigh and I was hour after hour with 6 year olds whose parents had signed them up for, you know, right. babysitting classes basically. And Mark, you're laughing because you know that life. but it I've just been fortunate to work with younger players, but it, and I'm fortunate to be able to pretty much work with who I want to now, and that's not saying that I don't want to work with middle school players or younger players and along those lines, you know, but guys who, you know, with what I do and the level of detail that I like to do it, can kind of serve higher level guys, you know, more so than younger kids. And I have some other guys that, you know, work with a lot of younger players, and so there are options for those kids, especially like here in Charlottesville. But for me, like I said, I'm very fortunate. This is my full-time job, and there aren't a lot of guys who are training, who is their full-time job, and get to work with who they work with.
Can you just have 3 hours a day set aside for my 2 5-year-olds? Is the real reason I'm asking this question?
Absolutely, through Zoom. I'll stand right here.
That's all I need. So, game. How big is your following?
The reason I asked that, I actually got a call from somebody who was going on telling me how good his kid was, and he wanted to try out for the EYBL team I'm going to be coaching. And he goes, yeah, my kid trains with Damon. So that's why, and you should know that because he's really good. And so clearly he's doing it through Zoom. So, I mean, I think he's doing it through Zoom. And your reach is really wide.
Yeah, I've been just been lucky. I've got a handful of followers on Instagram and Twitter, and you know, have handful. Like you said, content on YouTube and different things. And so it's just, like I said, I'm just been fortunate that people have been receptive to some of the stuff that I've put out in the past. And like everybody knows, it only takes one video to blow up a following pretty quickly.
I've been dying to ask this one UVA related question. I always bring it back to UVA because I'm just like that. But you've been on a bunch of podcasts talking about it, you know, the championship, that, you know, watching that as a different perspective, right? You're the trainer. You're vested in these guys. You've worked with these guys, and then to watch them at that level, 75,000 fans, millions on. Like, you know, everyone has a different perspective on it. You've talked about it a little bit, but maybe I'm thinking especially the one shot, you know, I think it was like 6 minutes left. Ty hits that post up fadeaway that you guys have worked on. Like, how are you feeling during this time? Is it, are there nerves? Are you proud? What's going on?
Oh, I was so nervous. Stood pretty much standstill, arms like for every game and in its entirety. I don't know, one of the most impressive things I thought after UMBC was, you know, especially like Ty and Dre, was they really took it. Like, I think one of Ty's first texts to me said something about like this, like I didn't work as much as I should have last year. I want to be in the gym more this off season. Like I travel some in the off season. Like if I have to drive somewhere, I'll drive somewhere. So as soon as, you know, everything happened with UMBC, it's like they all took responsibility. There wasn't blame being, you know, fingers weren't being pointed. There wasn't blame being given. It was all like, let's get better and let's come back. And in that first text conversation with Ty, I said something to him about like Minneapolis is going to be all that much more sweeter after this. And now it's just kind of like we kind of mentioned that several times throughout the year. And then you get to those games, like he hit the big floater against Purdue, he hit the fall away. And so it's, you know, obviously it's not about me at all. It's all them and their games. When you sit there, you're like, man, we rep this out hundreds and thousands of times this summer, and now it's translating on, you know, literally the biggest stage in college basketball on the back of the, you know, the story happening. It's hard not to sit there and be proud. I'm not that old yet. So it's like watching your little brother succeed, which is, yeah, it's just crazy. I get chill bumps right now thinking about it.
Dude, and that might be the coolest story we've had on this podcast. And I'm not kidding.
And
the fact that I came to you to my training, like I didn't work hard enough. And then the results of all that. That might be the coolest thing I've heard.
It just like the epitome of who they are. Like they took ownership, and then a year later, like cutting down nets and hoisting the trophies, and, you know, TB smacking the sticker on the, you know, the banner.
Yep.
I also heard, I don't know if it was, I'm not going to say who told me it. There was also a story, and we can edit this out if you're not comfortable talking about it, but there was a story, I think one of the players missed one of your workouts, and then you hit him back saying, hey, you know, first round picks, lottery picks, don't miss practice. Does that sound familiar to you at all?
Yeah.
And then never again. Yeah. That's awesome. Maybe walk us through what was that conversation like? Because that's not an easy conversation to have. The fact that you're able to do that, I think it's very telling.
Yeah, I feel like it was like a Saturday morning, and typically we didn't do things on Saturday mornings. We were just going to shoot. And I just sent that, and it said lottery picks don't miss workouts. And like, you're right. And like, he tapped it back with like the double exclamation point. And like, nothing was ever mentioned again. And he was at every workout, you know, from there on out, which is awesome. And again, like, it's, especially with Ty and Dre, have just very fortunate to have like a very strong relationship. You know, it's, you know, brutal honesty at times, but that comes obviously from a place of caring so much about him. Especially like with Ty, like, it's like he and I are like brothers now, and fight as such sometimes.
That's awesome. And what about the games, watching them? Let's just start with the Virginia games. Did you go to all of them? I know you got two little ones at home, so it's probably hard. Did you go to all of them? Did you make the trips to the tournament? How did you plan that?
Yeah, I said, I forget how many games I went to that year. It wasn't a ton. And I like watching games on TV. Just the nerd basketball trainer of me, like, likes to watch slow motion and all that stuff. And then the plan, I was supposed to go to the Final Four, but our, he's one or just turned one last month. The due date was like April 16th or something like that. And when we first found out the due date, I told my wife, I was like, UVA is definitely going to the Final Four now, because that's like the only reason that I would, the only reason I would miss it. And then sure enough, he was 2 weeks late and could have been there and everything. But so that year, like, didn't go to any of the tournament games, watched them on TV. But if there's any reason to miss it, it's definitely, you know, the chance that our son could have been born.
No, absolutely. That's a good one.
That's great. I've watched some of your workouts live. Right, I watched Ty through a workout, and it was nothing short of like incredible, right? And of course, I took some of that home too, and worked, used some of that in my trainings. And they are intense. They are literally intense, and it's not just you. There's a lot of coordination that goes into it. There's a lot of planning. You had like three or four guys in the workout, like playing defense, passing, recording stuff, writing stuff down. Right? How many trainers? Yeah. How many trainers across the country do you think are high-level trainers that work with NBA guys? Is it like 5? Is it like 100? Is it unlimited?
I think it's – I don't know. I definitely feel like you, if you're in the right spot, you can be in the gym with NBA players and not actually developing them. Like, you're, you know, you're just getting rebounds for them and whatnot. For me, like, it absolutely – it is my craft. And you'll never see me in the gym holding the phone, you know, filming for Instagram or anything like that. And no different than how Ty or Dre, Dev, Lund, any of these guys are, you know, dedicated to improving their craft. For me, it's the exact same way. And so once we get in the gym, obviously you've watched tons of film. Everything is coordinated based on what we're going to work on. obviously with pros, it's easier to get rebounders than for middle schoolers. But then you can simulate live action, still get plenty of shots. You know, I read a ton of like the sciencey side and how like making shots with the decision-making component is so much more valuable than just, you know, standing and mindlessly shooting the basketball. And so like to your, I know it's a long answer to your original question. I know there are a lot of guys who are putting in a lot of hours to help develop their players, you know, whether it's NBA level. But then there are also guys who are doing the same thing and they only work with middle school kids. But, you know, at the same time, like it's, I know that I want to do everything I can preparation wise going into workouts, as far as knowing how different people work, how different people think. Like I sent Ty, Dev and Dre, like Enneagram tests before they came this time. Just like looking at different personality things. And for me, like that's the only way to do it, because if we're asking them to give their all and study film and work on their bodies, then as a trainer, you know, it's absolutely essential to do those same things.
We were texting with Devin earlier, and Devin sent us a text that says, what makes you different is that you challenge and you challenge them and you incorporate skill work that they always need to work on, and you always have competitive little games incorporated into that skill work. Right. And so if, as a parent, how do I identify a good trainer?
One, if they're holding their phone in your kid's face while they're doing their drills, they're stealing your money. But I think that, you know, the biggest thing is you can tell professionalism, you can tell, you know, organization. I think that the toughest part is a lot of times people mistake movement for development, and a kid will be tired after a workout. And to the, you know, parents kind of assume, well, hey, you know, they got better because they're sweating and they moved. I think if you're a basketball person, if you've coached, if you've been involved at all, it's very easy to tell who knows what they're doing and who's just making it as they go. But on the other hand, parents who've never played or anything like that, it can be a little bit tougher. But at the same time, like there's just so much content kind of readily available. And I think if you watch certain guys' videos or anything on YouTube or Instagram, whatever, and the level of detail and teaching and applicability to the actual game, once you hear that, if you're working with somebody who's not doing any of that, it should become apparent pretty quickly that maybe you're with somebody who's just kind of, you know, working your kid out as opposed to developing them.
Yep. Gotcha. T-Dubs, do we have an impression series?
We do. I mean,
I have a question.
All right, go ahead. I'll get it ready.
I'm going to do my section, which is the Mount Rushmore of Virginia basketball. I'm going to go with you though. Mount Rushmore for you of guys you've worked out in terms of the process of doing the workout, like they work the hardest, get the most out of it, serious, whatever. That's what I'm curious about.
Gotcha. And let's see. Four guys? I get four guys, is that right?
We give you five.
Gotcha.
You cheat.
And it took Dev like 15 minutes to come up with them, I saw on Instagram.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh man, definitely Dre, Dev. Ty, Dre, Dev, London. Justin was such a short time period. It was so long ago. I'm trying to think. Definitely those four very quickly. Trying to make sure I'm not forgetting anybody. And then probably Kihei. And again, that's all kind of with the disclaimer that, you know, Justin was so long ago, very different. It was usually just me and him, and we're able to do a whole lot more now than what we were then. So Ty, Dre, Dev, Kihei, and Lun.
You ever had a ball thrown at you? Anybody ever get mad and just drill you with the ball?
Yeah, Ty did last week. I caught it. It didn't hit me. I threw a bad pass and it came back in my face. So
I had a feeling, Mark. I had a feeling.
I'll say, like, we fight like brothers sometimes. That was one of them.
Tyrone. Oh, that's so
good. I don't know where you get that from.
I wish I had you when we were coming up, man. I would have used that all the time.
I appreciate it.
And then we'll jump into it. I just got one more.
Well, you're pulling that up, T-Dubs. Huh? Have you ever been surprised by a player who's called you or texted you and said, hey, let's work out?
I feel like, I mean, the first one, when Justin reached out, because at that point, like, there was no real involvement with UVA, and, you know, Justin Anderson was one of the faces of the program. And then one of the coolest things too with Ty is like he actually texted before he ever got on campus. So it wasn't necessarily a surprise or a Twitter DM, but it was kind of something that was so out of the blue. Like, I don't even know if he was playing because of injury at that time, like 6 months out, like, hey, as soon as I get on campus, I want to work out. Like, he may even mentioned working out when he was going to be on campus during the spring for a visit or something like that. So just right away with him, it was like, oh man, like this kid's a little bit different. So probably Justin is a surprise, and then Ty is like, this is cool.
All right, I'm ready. I'm going to share my screen. And then let's start with this one. And this is basically all the guys you train, NBA Summer League. And my question was, these guys making their way into the NBA, how do you follow? You said you use Synergy, but as they're playing through Summer League and things like that, what's your communication with them like?
Trying to watch as much on, NBA TV and everything as possible, obviously. But then especially at that time, they're trying to figure things out. So most of the communication was just like, how is your experience right now? What are you learning? As opposed to, you need to work on this, because they're playing a lot of games in a short number of days. It's not like they have time to work out or anything like that. So, just kind of via text and virtually just kind of being along for the ride and being a, support system, through the phone.
And this next one, it's a little bit random, but this is the guys kneeling for injustice. I just was curious where your thoughts were when you saw something like this, when the team banded together for something.
Oh, incredible. It's just so much more than basketball, and so many people talk about it until it's time to actually do it. And this was just so moving.
And then we usually show, I didn't want to show it again, but the guy, and then 2 years later or whatever, the guys come in onto the lawn with the torches. What was that like for you being a Charlottesville resident?
It was actually crazy. I was on a flight to China for camps in China and was trying to following it on my phone and everything. And it was just, it didn't seem real. I feel like with any type of tragedy or any type of anything like that, when it hits home, like we were talking about this on the phone the other day, when it hits home, like it just hits differently. You always feel safe at home, and years after this, people are with torches and everything, and it's, that's not Charlottesville, that's not the University of Virginia. And so just, it hurts your heart in every way.
And then Light in the Mood, that one's always a little, we had a t-shirt with London on, and we did a podcast with him recently. We've talked about Cali Cool. What was your impression of Cali Cool in terms of a playing style?
Never got sped up, and it was the exact same thing in workouts. And Mark kind of touched on the intensity. One of the big things that I try to do is, in certain components, like get guys out of their comfort zone to the point that they're uncomfortable, not so much just physically, but mentally. And with him, like, it took me a few workouts to realize, like, if his brain's moving fast, like, he's not going to show any type of expression on his face to indicate as such. That Cali Cool mentality definitely translates from on the court in the biggest stages to workout sessions.
And do you think, when we talked about this in terms of, do you think there was a misconception initially early that he doesn't care, like, because he's so cool with it?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like as coaches, sometimes we do a bad job of that. We see a kid who kind of has that facial expression. There's no rah-rah about him, and it's, they don't care, but that's not it at all. Obviously he cared a ton. Yeah. Carried himself differently than, say Justin or somebody like that, who gets really fired up after big plays.
Right. That was always an interesting balance for him. And then empty arena, COVID-19, what has this been like this time for you? Obviously you're busy, but overall.
Yeah, it's like this time of year is typically one of my busiest times because college guys are all back in town and getting towards what would typically be the end of the NBA season. Obviously high school guys are gearing up for the summer. So kind of make your living in empty gyms with the you know, always the message, like, we're in empty gyms, and next year when the gym is packed and the lights are on, you're going to be prepared. And so just the uncertainty, like everybody right now, the uncertainty of, hey, like, all gyms are empty and we're not sure when the lights are coming back on is scary. But the message now when we're doing Zoom workouts, or if I'm sending written workouts or anything, it's, you know, when the lights do back on, nobody's going to care what your situation was or if you had an excuse. It's when the lights come back on, it's who's prepared and who's not. So let's do everything we can to prepare.
So I know you do these Zoom ones, and we'll link those below, but have you thought about the transition into when you can do the workouts? Are you going to do masks, especially if you've got, you know, varying ages and different demos coming to you? Have you planned that out?
Yeah. So it's kind of, you know, trying to stay right on top of what, you know, especially with Virginia, like governor recommendations are, but then obviously going to be very, very careful, as we are being now with, you know, with Ty and Dre and those, trying to remain distance more so than what we normally would, keep things clean. And then, you know, if masks are necessary, then, you know, we'll use them. But I know myself and players included would prefer to be working out with masks on and keeping a little bit of distance as opposed to not being in the gym at all.
Right. Next one. This is Minnie, you talked about this already, but Minneapolis got Roger Mason, Sean Singletary, Josh Hare, Malcolm, OG Whitebone. When you, I don't know why I always say that, but in terms of like, was there partially some FOMO here when you're seeing us winning it and all that, and you're, you know, obviously at home, but for good reason.
Yeah, it was so. When they were showing all the pictures and like guys in the stands and everything, you know, whether it was like, you know, years and years ago, you know, Roger Mason wearing, I guess he like wore and one when he played, right?
Yeah.
You know, Sean in the Lado days, and just like everything that everybody had been through and done and put into the program, to see them all come back full circle, and, you know, D winning his first one is just, I don't know, like everybody, I can't say it better than it hasn't been said before. You know, what Coach Bennett did for, and the team did for Charlottesville, for those who've come before. It's, I don't know, again, like I said, it gives me thinking about like what was accomplished with that team.
Awesome. Next one. This is the baptism of Devin Hall. So after whatever senior night, I think he played Pitt, he goes, gets baptized. I was just going to get your opinion on these guys have such a strong faith. Do you share in that a little bit, or talk about that with them?
Yeah. So I'm a person of faith. We don't really talk about it a ton. I've had some conversations with certain guys, talked with Ty about, like, you know, his beliefs, Dev, about what he believes. But it's not a piece to what I do. He's such a phenomenal person. His faith is obviously crucial to what he does, to the point, like, he tries not to curse in workouts. He's just like all these guys, whenever the ball stops bouncing, he's going to be tremendously successful in whatever he does because of just how good of a person he is.
Absolutely. And on that note, this next one.
Tiger King. Haven't watched it yet, so can't really give you much of a comment on that one.
All right.
It came out of the beginning. All right,
we need to end this thing so you can go watch this. But what are you watching right now? I know you got two little ones, so you're probably not watching a whole lot. Is there a guilty pleasure in terms of a TV program that you've been to?
We're rewatching Parks and Rec right now. so kind of like pretty lighthearted.
Yeah.
So
you're on your Mount Rushmore of comedies. Is that up there? Or
probably The Office is my number one.
Yeah, The Office is so good.
Yeah.
Secret Weapon, the basketball episode.
Yes.
Yeah. So good. All right.
The real goat, Michael.
All right. This next one, shout out Anna Bennett, awesome, who put this thing together. Have you trained Eli? Have you worked him out at all? Or is it on the radar? I think he's got a pretty good coach himself at home, but I'm curious.
Yeah, right. It worked with EB some. He's a fiery competitor. Great kid. Can really shoot it, especially now. And as you can see in this picture, he's getting kind of jacked here as he's getting to the end of his high school career.
Disclaimer to that. His sister says those aren't real. His muscles. Are-
is he right? Right hand or left handed?
He's a righty.
I think he should just skip basketball and be a male model. It's a good looking dude.
That's awesome. And last one. Oh, you know, I'll zoom in this. Just in Cameron, not necessarily this photo, but Cameron Indoor. What when in your walk on days, walking in there, what were your thoughts and first impressions?
So we that year, we didn't play because you weren't playing everybody away. We didn't play.
Oh yeah, that's right.
That was your Sean hit the fall away with the stare down. Now as soon as Cameron comes to mind, I think of one, Grayson Allen's travel, and then two, Ty's fake three from the top of the key.
Yeah, that's awesome. So what, and that, on that Duke game, what do you remember about that game specifically, that fadeaway floater game winner, iconic Charlottesville moment?
It's
what were you doing? So what were you doing when that went in? Like after that game, were you running on the court? Were you screaming? Were you?
Yeah, running on the court, screaming. Probably trying to be the first one to Sean to get a little bit of TV time, because obviously I wasn't getting any when that game was actually happening.
And then I was going to ask you. You mentioned you were the first, you know, first team on JPJ. What about the first game, Arizona, opening up, Michael Buffett? The whole thing, was that, I mean, that as your first experience in the arena, what was going through your mind?
Oh, it's crazy. Then, I mean, obviously you guys know, got down big to Arizona, yeah. Kind of fought back. Mamadou Diagne kind of sprung onto the scene. I forget what he finished with, but it was, you know, he had a big game. It was just, I remember getting out and you finished after the game, like going back to my dorm room, and it was just like, you were exhausted from the range of emotions. And at the same time, like trying to long and reflect back, it was like, man, like this is ACC basketball. This is incredible.
You get to see, and really first game for JPJ to see the power of the arena. And
right.
That was really cool. And that's it.
Yeah, two crew days.
Yeah, that's right.
Before we go to Dougie with his question, with his segment, you also coach high school basketball at St. Ben,
right? Saint, yeah,
Belfield, right?
Right. Yep.
How often are you with your kids training, and how much time do you have throughout every day?
Like right now, I'm not with them any, unfortunately. But it's kind of, as you know, doing training, you know, training things. There's time available, but it's not obviously not your typical work day, especially during the school year. Whether it's, you know, college guys or high school kids. So typically my on court work day kind of starts at 5 or 6 o'clock, and you're there as long as you need to be. And it's just kind of part of it. Like my wife played, her dad coached Division III college. So I'm very fortunate that like she, you know, she's kind of come from a basketball family and kind of familiar with that. Again, like very, very fortunate that I chased her to UVA, I guess. There's not a lot of free time. You definitely got to make the best of the time you do have. It's absolutely not a typical 9-to-5 work day.
Right. But if you have high school practice, you train a couple of guys, how much time do you have to train a guy like Kihei? How often do you train him throughout the week?
Yeah. So in season's different too. Obviously, like, especially with load management now and so strict on, you know, limited number of, or, you know, just all their caloric expenditures and different things along those lines. So during the season, it's very, very rare, unless it's, you know, I'm not really feeling good about my floater. Can I just come in for 20 minutes and get up a bunch of floaters? Ty would sometimes come do, like, I feel like my handle's a little loose. Can we just do 15 minutes? So it's very, very limited, which is, for me, fortunate that it kind of works out that way. Otherwise, I would never be home.
What have you found is the optimal? You mentioned something I always think about, the optimal amount of time for a workout. Is it 30 minutes? Warm up 30 minutes? Hard work?
Yeah, I like most workouts. Now is a little bit different because of the uncertainty, but typically what I'll do are basically an hour. Start with some type of ball. I tell them to get loose on their own, do some sort of ball handling, then whatever skill we're working on, get into the short sided games where we're repping out actions, and then finish with shots. So it's not an hour of straight intensity. But at the same time, we're fill the hour, it goes very quickly because we're doing different things, but then at the same time, feel like you're not overloading them with new information so that they can actually acquire those skills. But it, you know, it's for me, an hour is kind of that, that sweet spot.
Yep.
I was going to say the biggest, St. Anne's, whatever, alum that went D1, is it Javon Delory? Is he the one that, obviously Duke being a big name, is he somebody that comes back? I know you didn't personally coach him, right? I don't think you overlapped.
Yeah, I was an assistant. So Javon, on the, obviously the basketball side, and of course Chris Long, football-wise.
Right.
Yeah, hopefully more to come in the future.
Yeah, is that something you mark as a goal in terms of like getting some guys into big D1 programs?
I'm fortunate that because of kind of the player development piece, the players want to get better, and so that's kind of if players inquire about the program, you know, what sets you apart, you know, the development is key, and NBA guys are in our gym in the summer, you know, that's to the highest level that guys are trusting what we're doing developmentally.
And then I had one last question in terms of guys we haven't touched on Mamadi. I see you working out. We all know him. Great kid, great guy. He's, you know, when he's deciding on whether to leave early or stay, where are you in that process? Are you helping him along the way, or is this, or do you stay out of that conversation? And where is your mind at in terms of like, you know, we all talk about rooting interest a little bit in terms of like, hey, selfishly, I wanted to come back to be close to home or whatever. Or are you like, it would be great to see him fulfill that dream and be in the NBA and I can help him there?
Yeah, so especially last year, worked with Mamadi in high school early on in his career. Like the last couple of years, like we just haven't connected nearly as much. And so it's kind of was like following from afar last year. It was twofold, obviously, program-wise. Like, man, if he comes back, he's gonna be the man. He could be a Mike Scott his last year type situation where everything's going through him. But at the same time, like ever since I'd known him when he was in high school out at Blue Ridge, he wanted to be in the NBA. So it's kind of that twofold. It seems like he definitely, you know, he made the right decision in seeing projections and talking to some people, you know, from last year. And then now I hate it for him that like he couldn't be in the gym, you know, doing those individual workouts for guys. Like everybody, he's in a waiting game, but it's going to be exciting to see, you know, where he winds up.
Absolutely.
I have one specific question to the training and stuff. A lot of times when you work out and you do your work, you know, your jumper's going, your handle's tight. When you're on the court in a game and the lights are on, sometimes it doesn't translate. Do you focus on that? How to make sure that, you know what I mean? Some guys are great workout guys at working out in the game. Sometimes it doesn't come across. Do you deal with that mental aspect a little bit?
Yeah, so I was big, especially when I was first started doing this, which was, you know, a long time ago. I feel like I was doing a great job of creating players who were very successful in workouts and probably not so much in games. As bad as that sounds. but just kind of having, you know, grown and learning and seeing all sides of it, coaching help is, you start to realize more as a coach, like the pressures that they're hearing from parents, the external voices, you know, doing workouts are pretty easy. And so now, especially, you know, transitioning to where everything has that decision-making component there, if we're working on a quick catch and release with, whether it's Ty or with a high school kid, if they're capable of making shots, then there's going to be a defense, there's going to be a contest, there's going to be something that makes it more than just, hey, shoot faster than them and let's make 10. It literally every single drill we do has some type of decision making, some type of consequence. There's never just make 8, just shoot 10. It's you have to make 10 shots, but if you miss the 10th shot, you're back to 0. That's what we were doing yesterday with Ty, Dre, and Dev. So there's a lot of pressure on that last shot. So trying to, as much as is possible, in a controlled environment, kind of create those pressure situations, create the chaos that is, you know, is there in live games. And for me, it seems like that translates a whole lot better than just, hey, let's go to the gym and, you know, shoot 500 shots. While that's important to really develop, acquire new skills, I think you have to have the other piece.
Yep. I had a coach back in the day, kind of the system I came up in, Don Meyer, legend from David Lipscomb. And he always said, practice doesn't make perfect. Perfect practice makes perfect.
Right.
So I thought that you know, you can do like you said, shoot 500 shots all the wrong way. It doesn't matter if you're not doing
right. Right. Yeah, cones are historically terrible defenders.
By definition.
So it's, you know, the cones or whatever, bones over cones, that a lot of people say, like, whether it's kids or high level guys, like, let's think a little bit. I feel so often we say the most lacking skill in players is their ability to make decisions, but then in player development sessions, we're never making decisions. Everything is robotic. Everything is external coaches. And so I try to pretty much be 180 degrees in the opposite direction, where the players have a ton of autonomy. They're making decisions. And then there's some sort of consequence or pressure to everything.
Yeah, we got to do it to them.
We got to do one more segment. Mount Rushmore segment.
Yeah, you got to give us your University of Virginia basketball Mount Rushmore.
And when I saw it, I'm so biased to guys that I've worked with.
Yeah, it's your list. Doesn't matter if I don't agree with it.
So can it be any five, or do you want five like position?
No, any five.
Oh, any five. Five greatest in your, for whatever reason, to you in UVA history.
Oh man. I'm not going to take 15 minutes. Obviously, Ralph.
Yep.
Let's go Ralph, Malcolm, Ty, Dre, and I got to go. I'm going Dev, just because I love him so much as a kid. And I think that
love it.
He's a winner.
I guess it. You don't know much about 1993 Virginia basketball then, do you? kind of disappointed, but no, I'm kidding. That's all awesome. And I love the reasons.
That's great.
That's cool.
Love it.
Yeah.
Ralph is a staple, as usual.
With everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody says Ralph. It's like it's just comes right out.
Right. Dame, best of luck. Best of luck in the recovery during the COVID with the business. And we look forward to hanging with you and talking to you and developing with you as we move forward and as you move forward. For T-Dubs and Dougie Fresh, I'm Mark Jerome, giving you Locker Room Access.
Gibbs fakes the pass and sends it down with a tomahawk slam. That's the winner here. Up the front.